Artist Ying Li was asked about her unflagging dedication to painting outdoors. Why doesn't she simply paint in the studio, where there are fewer distractions? And she explains, "Your relationship with a motif is very different in outdoor painting. When you're out there and inside of it, you are only a tiny part of your surroundings. That kind of perspective and scale is so different. It's not like something right in front of you, as in a still life. I like being part of the scene, being there. I love that sensation when I'm out there. I think my Chinese background kicks in somewhere here. In Chinese philosophy, people and nature are one. When you see those classical Chinese landscape paintings, there are often a little person somewhere in there, but they are so tiny compared with the huge mountains. A little scholar on a donkey crossing a little bridge with huge chunks of mountains right behind him. Things like that. Also, there's no previously set focus. That is another important thing. For example, if a model is posing, he or she usually is your focus. You deal with the relationships of all the other elements with this person. When you're outside painting, it's like, wow, what am I going to do? Where to start? What to choose? Right away, you're just thrown into this chaos, and light changes so quickly. You have to make your decision constantly and quick. I love that kind of challenge. I react better, and it keeps me on my toes. I never felt I didn't know what to do when I'm out there, because right away, I jump into the painting. In the studio, sometimes it took me forever to get started. I could just sit there, stuff myself with snacks, listen to music, and flip through some art books. But when I'm outside, it's boom, right into the game. I think of painting landscape similar as the jazz musicians playing together. They make decisions in a split second and improvise instinctively to what the other guys are playing. They listen and react to each other and get things going. To me, painting landscape outside is a lot like that. It opens doors. I love the change and instability. They help me to make decisions about what's next." Words of artist Ying Li in conversation with Larry Groff in September of this year, in connection with a solo exhibition of her work titled Geographies, then at Haverford College and currently at the Sordoni Art Gallery at Wilkes University in Wilkes-Barre. As she talks of the thrill she experiences in being part of her surroundings when she is outdoors, at the edge of the sea or the base of a mountain, it is as if she, as an artist, lets the sounds, rhythms, colors of the world resonate within her, and she, tuned to those vibrations and her experience of them, projects those impressions onto her canvases. And she uses musical analogies to help us understand how she listens in the largest sense. We're hearing music by John Luther Adams titled Become Ocean, a revealing title, Become Ocean. The listener to such music has been compared to a hiker working his or her way across a landscape, a hiker who must submit to the vastness, the unknowability, the richness of the textures and patterns, and the accidental coincidences of this whole process. That from an essay by Bernd Herzogenrath in Farthest Place. And similarly, we too will encounter rich textures and patterns and a sense of vastness in the landscapes and other pieces created by award-winning artist Ying Li in the exhibition Geographies. Ying Li is an award-winning artist who graduated from Anhui Teachers University in China, where she has taught, and a decade later received a Master's of Fine Arts degree from the Parsons School of Design in New York. She is Professor of Fine Arts and Department Chair at Haverford College here in Pennsylvania, and she maintains a studio in Chelsea in New York that was the study of her late husband, Michael Gaster, a scholar and historian of modern Chinese history. WVIA's Robert Salzberg met with Ying Li at the Sordoni Gallery to talk about and explore up close the paintings in the exhibition Geographies, and they began by situating her own geographical trajectory.
I was born in China, in Beijing, under communist regime, what we call under the red flag. I always like doodling, sort of. You wander into your own little pocket. And also because my father was interested in art very much, and I remember I saw this was one day I was sick, couldn't go to school, and I was just, you know, flip through his books and magazines, and there was one magazine in Russian. Of course, I didn't understand, but there were two pictures. One is Picasso's Blue Period. These two figures sitting, you know, by the sidewalk. Then the one at the bottom was Matisse's Gold Fishbowl, which the painting is in Pushkin Museum in Moscow. And those two paintings still stay with me, you know. After all these years, it just made such a huge impression on me. You know, the color, the vivid color, and the, you know, the kind of expressiveness which you didn't see in the propaganda art during that time in China. And, you know, the very personal, just unique.
And then when it was time for junior high school, the Cultural Revolution arrived. Is that right?
Right, right. My father got arrested, put in labor camp for 10 years. And during that 10 years, I didn't see him. And soon after he was sent away, I was sent to, you know, to the farmland in very remote part of Anhui province to do labor work on, you know, on the field. I was not like a very, you know, rare case that time. Students, you know, sent to countryside to be re-educated. It's like that's the big moment going on at the time. So I was in countryside for 5.5 years. During that time, I did some propaganda art for the village.
Posters, that kind of thing?
Yeah, copy of posters on the wall. You know, mouse portraits. And, you know, that kind of art was all over in China. That's what occupied China.
So you were copying posters in this village on this farm, and how did you begin to do painting?
I didn't do much painting. Mostly I drew and painted a little bit because I didn't have art material. Only I could get a little bit art material, you know, got my hands on it when I was doing these propaganda things, but very, very limited. But, you know, I wouldn't call it art now. It's really, I did this little bit of images, visual thing, just got myself through, you know, the hardship.
You did go to college to study art, didn't you? And then you taught.
I did. I went to college pure by this huge luck. I broke my leg in the countryside. I couldn't get any treatment. And for quite a while, in the situation, the condition got worse. They finally sent me back to the city. And I got operated on. And then the school started to reopen after 10 years closing. And it started to accept students. I was just like so overwhelmingly happy to hear that. But then I found out I was not even qualified to apply because my political background, you know, because my father was considered anti-revolution, and that was huge crime at the time. So I was not qualified, you know, to go to college. But then the professor fought for me, and he saw some potential in my work. So he fought really hard to get me into college. That was like a turning point in my life. After the college, then another big luck happened when the Gulf War fell. So the whole political atmosphere started to change. Then they hired me to teach in the same department. So I got to do art as my profession. That was just heavenly. Even at the time, I was not really happy about my own artwork because I did a bunch of commission work, you know, for the government. And I didn't feel like this is really my own stuff. But at the same time, I didn't know what I really want to paint or what I really want my art, you know, look like.
So you were painting socialist, realist paintings, workers and people out in the fields and machines and that sort of thing?
Yeah. And, you know, workers, soldiers, farmers, of course, you know, the enemies, and the enemies all looked, you know, gray and blue.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes. You know, that's sort of like a color code, you know, how you paint certain images. And, of course, the workers, soldiers, and the farmers, they all look strong in the pink cheeks and the happy.
And then you met your husband. Mm-hmm. You met the man who was to become your husband. Mm-hmm. And that led to eventually your coming to New York.
Yes. I came to New York in 83. The first impression was the city in the dawn. And the sun just came down. My husband, Michael, picked me up at Newark Airport. We drove towards the city. That was like a magical moment. You know, I saw the city, you know, full of light and looked like, you know, fairyland. And that was just incredible. It was incredible. I never saw that huge volume of light. Because in China at that time, you know, things got dark. The place got dark at 8 o'clock.
No lights.
Limited lights.
So you've had a really remarkable introduction to New York and to the United States in terms of arts and music.
I had the best introduction. The second day after I arrived, we went to a Museum of Modern Art. First time I saw Picasso, Matisse, Giacometti, you know, all this great artists, Bernard, you know, Soutine, you know, I heard those names, and I might see a couple of reproductions here or there, but I never seen their work in person. So first time I saw those work, you know, I was a painter at the time, but I never had any, you know, introduction, you know, to, I think those are, you know, really some of the best Western art. So first time I saw those, you know, it was just like so thrilling. I remember standing in front of these Cezanne. It's a big Cezanne bather, you know, on the beach. My tear just ran down, and the painting is just it's amazing. It's amazing. The painting just you know, felt so close. But the first time I saw it, That same night, we went to hear jazz or heard Dollar Brand.
Dollar Brand.
Yeah, Abdullah Ibrahim. Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing. That, you know, from that time, I just fell in love with jazz. And through all these years, my husband and I, you know, went to jazz clubs regularly. And after he passed away, I go myself to draw the jazz musicians and just listen to the music. And those moments, actually, that's the time I can think of my own painting the clearest. Those music give me so much idea and energy.
Are you saying that when you're in the club, you're able to think about your painting?
Totally. I could see my painting, even maybe it doesn't exist, but I can see them while I was listening to the music. Somehow the music just feed me the energy and the image also, and the rhythm and the, you know, what direction the painting should go. Yeah, give me so much idea.
And then you also saw a de Kooning show, a de Kooning retrospective around that time.
That's right. Another knockout. Yeah, just the first time I saw his work, I was not familiar with his work at all. I didn't see his work. I hardly heard anything about him in China that time. But first time see that show, I remember there's one wall has four or five paintings of women. That wall just knocked me out. The first time, you know, first of all, the scale of the painting, you know, the size of the painting, and also the way he painted them, you know, oh, my goodness, you could paint a person that way. It's just like a totally open the door. So through my grad school, you know, he's like a big, big influence on me, just in terms of how you can just, you know, be free. Not be free, let's say, just, you know, there is a different way to approach image and to approach the look of the painting. You know, it's a totally different from how I was trained in China and also how I paint that time.
We're sitting in the middle of the Sordoni Gallery and we're surrounded by your paintings, this beautifully hung show. And one of the first things you notice when you come in is a lot of color, a lot of wonderful color, and it takes a minute for the eye to look into the color, get accustomed, and see what's there. And one of the things I notice, first of all, of course, Geographies is the name of the show. It's landscape, seascape, cityscape, mountains, and it's work you've done in Switzerland and Colorado and New York City and Cranberry Island in Maine. And one of the things that strikes me is a lot of the paintings are easy to read as landscapes or cityscapes, and others not so much. They take longer, and others really you don't see real things there, representational things. And it's interesting that it's all one practice for you. It's not that you work abstract over here one day or one month or one year and representational the next. There's a deep resemblance. They're all of a piece.
Yeah, I think it's natural for artists try to do different things and try different ideas, different way to approach a piece and a different way to interpret the motif. You know, it's just like, you know, you wanted to have a Chinese food one meal and the next one, you know, you want to have a Mexican. Just it needed to change. And always I think, you know, that's like a natural thing. And for me, first thing, I love to travel to places to paint. The freshness and the you know, that fresh reaction to what you see, that is so precious. But also I like to revisit the same places because that will give me a chance to dig deeper and try to, you know, to just like feed my own curiosity, what's really under there. And also how I can say this idea in a different way. Usually, you know, I start to paint in a new place. I try to really paint, you know, more representatively, try to understand the structure and the scale of things and the color palette. Along the way, usually I stay one place, you know, for you know, a few weeks. In Switzerland, I got this great opportunity to be there for 3 months. So really give me idea to try different ideas. Usually one painting lead to the next. One painting give me idea what next I want to do. Also, after a while, and I start to think about different issues, you know, such as how the mood and the air and the weather and the light can totally change the structure of the painting. Also lead the painting into different path. I've been thinking and looking those classical Chinese landscape paintings, you know, think about those structure, you know, how they structure, compose a painting, you know, put different elements together through this very stylized strokes, different strokes, in the way, you know, they're so abstract that sort of give me so many ideas how I wanted to approach my own painting and how these different strokes and the different kind of a length of it. Also, you know, how much pressure I put down and, you know, it's wet on wet in terms of the material, or it's, you know, thick on thin or thin on thick, all different kind of elements of doing this and can create this kind of a symphonic unity. You know, I think about that a lot. Also through the process, you know, how the unexpected kick in and something you're not planned. But during the process, they come. And those are, you know, I think those are like a gem. Those are the things you work for. So when that happened, how you recognize it and how you use it and maybe take you to different place. So it's a very organic process. These group you just mentioned, this 30 pieces mixed media on both paper and the boards, you know, they came along with those big pieces. When I do the big pieces, I do these. These really help me to understand the texture, not the texture, the structure, what I'm looking at. Also, they are more representational than some of the paintings because I wanted to really get what I look at down on these little studies and try to work out how the structure and the movement and the different brushwork that can work together and give me some solutions or just help me to think about how I approach the big paintings.
Let's go over to this corner. This is one of the two large paintings in the show. This is the biggest painting in the show, isn't it?
It is.
And this is a cityscape. What I do see is what looks like Chinese calligraphy.
Oh, that's the best. That's the best thing I want to hear. Yes, yes. Actually, these paintings are kind of interesting. This painting went through so many stages. I started as a, you know, quite a representational what's out there, outside of the window. This is the same window in Michael's study. Now it's my studio in Chelsea. And then I started to get bored. I thought, oh, feels like I painted this painting before, because I did more representational kind of paintings of this part of the city. And also this scale, it's a vertical piece, 74 by 48 inches, I think. And it's vertical, and, you know, like a lot of those Chinese landscape paintings, you know, how they construct from the very bottom, you know, small things that give you kind of a contrast, how those little piece of a rock and the contrast with the huge mountains at the back. So when I was working on this painting, I was thinking about those classical Chinese landscape paintings. And then, you know, after a couple of months working on this, one day I started to work on it again. I started like 8:30 in the morning, and I just worked through the day and through different light and the shadow changing, and then into the evening. Then got very dark, so I had to turn on the light in the studio so I could see what I was doing. And at that time, I couldn't see anything outside. Maybe a little bit here, there, you know, some of the light, because the reflection of the studio on the window, couldn't see anything outside. And so I basically working from my memory, the accumulation of memory and the image through the day. I just kept working on that. Then I was thinking, oh, I want to get the very basic elements of these constructions, of, you know, these geometric shapes. And so I just pick up the pen tubes and I started to draw those lines, little tiny swirling lines and some straighter lines. And then I felt like they get a little too fussy. So I pick up I think it's a speckle, you know, used for a house pen, you know, 7 inches.
A knife, they call it, speckle knife.
Yeah, a speckle knife, and the 7 inches. And then I went on top of everything and made this sort of like a firework swirling movement. And when that happened, that really hold all the smaller, sharper, skinnier lines together.
So it does. And it brings everything into focus and it gives it motion.
Yeah, yeah. So that's it. Also, that piece of a red, bright red, works with the more muted, like flash color and some cooler reds and the orange line. You know, I think that red is just like a perfect, how that worked there.
Well, let's look at something else. So we've been in the city. Let's go to the mountains. We can go to Switzerland or we can go to Colorado.
These three smaller size are Ascona, Switzerland. This is from my first residence there. I painted them one spot looking out the garden, across the valley, into the mountains on the other side of the valley. And they're all painted in a different time and different day. The middle one, called the Summer Flowers, it's most gestural in these three pieces. That painting actually went through a lot and started as more representational. And then I got bored and I thought, you know, need some drastic change. So I just have a big brushes and lay out these very strong marks and suggest, you know, these colors, a little pink in the yellow at the back, you know, suggest those flowers on the mountain.
It's marvelous the way it makes light out of material, out of stuff. It's paint, it's glop, and yet it turns into light.
Of course, that's the, you know, that's a mystery of a painting. Yeah, that's the, also, it's like that's the mystery of oil paint and how the paint can become something, totally something else.
I would say, looking at these paintings, that the New York action painters are still very important to you in a way.
Yes, yes. And I think those, you know, there's something to do also with the Chinese art. I think those, you know, abstract expressionists, you know, the way they paint, they echo to some ideas in Chinese painting. And, you know, literati paintings, there's a Zen paintings, you know, so in a way, as a Chinese, somehow that came to me naturally, you know, the way how the body moves in the painting, not just come from wrist, it really comes from the earth that you're standing on, you know, how that through your body and how the whole body is the instrument or is the painting. Yeah, so that's how this painting, you know, this kind of a movement comes out.
Let's go to the ocean.
These three paintings I painted during the residency at Halakarla Houghton Foundation in Cranberry Island in Maine. It's just a wonderful residency in the just most gorgeous spot. Little island, middle of the ocean, and these three paintings are painted on one spot on the shore. And the one on the left, you see the vista, you know, the big space of the shore and the ocean and the sky, you know, how they constructed together.
The vastness,
yeah. And, you know, I try to get a feel of the energy, you know, moving through the space.
You certainly did.
Thank you. And the middle one is sunset time. And that one, actually, I scrape off everything, you know, after a whole day working. And then I started to sort of define the big geometric form and the movements. I think that one, you know, it's a very much transformed. And the one on the right, I try to paint the crash waves as portrait. In a way, it's like a impossible task. But I remember standing there and just like painting, like chasing the wave, you know, try to get that movement because the next second it's gone. And try to get the form and get the movement and get the kind of a, you know, I look at this painting, I hear it. I hear the shore, I hear the ocean, and I feel the water, how that splash on me. And, you know, that just brought back all the memory. Yeah, that's great.
It's in the tradition of Homer and Bellows. Those people who painted
really,
in Maine?
Yeah, yeah, sure. Also, I think about all those, again, those Chinese paintings of water paintings, you know, how they painted the movement and the feel of the water and either the lightness or the drama of those waves. I also thought about those, too. In a way, it's interesting, after all these years being here, you know, I think about the Chinese art more and more. You know, it's a sort of like the source comes back. So I'm like looking back, but in a very different way.
I see. That leads into something I wanted to ask you that you told Larry Goff. You have a wonderful quotation by Philip Guston.
Actually, it's not really Guston's words. I think it's John Cage's words.
That makes more sense. It sounds more like John Cage than Philip Guston.
I think it's John Cage visit Guston and, you know, they talk about the process, you know, creative process, either in music or art. It's, you know, something like, you know, when you're in your studio, everybody's there with you. The whole history and your mentors, your friends, you know, your professors. And then, you know, while you're working, they leave one by one. And then, you know, if you're lucky and you yourself leave. And so that means, you know, the best thing will come out at that time.
Artist Ying Li, who in painting, especially outdoors, is caught up in the moment like a jazz musician on the qui vive. Her ego in its willfulness is not in control. She spoke in conversation with WVIA's Robert Salzberg at the Sordoni Art Gallery at Wilkes University in Wilkes-Barre in connection with her current solo exhibition, Geographies, running now through December 18th. The gallery is located at 150 South River Street in Wilkes-Barre, hours Tuesdays through Sundays, noon to 4:30, though the Sordoni is closed during university holidays, such as this Thanksgiving weekend. For more information, on the web at wilkes.edu/Sordoni Art Gallery. And Sordoni is spelled S-O-R-D-O-N-I, wilkes.edu/Sordoni Art Gallery. Ying Li, Geographies, curated by Faye Hirsch and organized by the Cantor Fitzgerald Gallery and McGill Library at Haverford College, now through December 18th, at the Sordoni Art Gallery at Wilkes University in Wilkes-Barre. For more information, wilkes.edu/Sordoni Art Gallery.